Welcome to the Focus Today podcast with Perry Atkinson.
Well, welcome to Focus Today. I'm your host, Perry Atkinson, and so delighted to have with us today Will Scharf. He is a former federal prosecutor, a conservative activist who is now running for attorney general in the state of Missouri. As a Republican, during the Trump administration, Will worked to support conservative judicial nominations and playing really a great role, an instrumental role, in the confirmation of Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett. So we have a lot to talk to him about. By the way, he does have a website, votescharf.com. That's S-C-H-A-R-F.com. All right, check that out. And you can learn more about it as candidacy. Will, good to see you. How are you, friend?
Great to be with you today. Thanks so much for having me.
How's the campaign going?
Campaign's going great. Missourians, conservative Missourians all across the state are fired up. And I think you're probably seeing that all over the country now. People are really fed up with the way things are going and are ready for a change. And for me, at least, that's a good thing.
Well, that's good. When's your primary?
It'll be in August. So we've got another five or so months to go.
Whoa. Boy, you're way out there. Well, good to see you. Thanks for your time. A lot to talk to you about. First of all, let's talk a little bit about what's happening at the border and why this is happening and why we're allowing it. What's your take on this?
Yeah, so, you know, when you look at the Biden administration's policy towards the border since taking office, you have to assume that what they're doing is intentional, that under President Trump, the border was basically controlled. The number of illegal entries was declining year on year. We had the Remain in Mexico policy. We had third-party agreements with other countries. This system of just a totally uncontrollable flood of people moving across the southern border didn't exist. Then the Biden folks came in. They reversed most of those Trump-era policies, or almost all of those Trump-era policies. And now we have a situation where the latest numbers, the best estimates, are between 7 and 8 million illegal entries just since the start of the Biden administration alone. And I think that speaks to a degree of intentionality. I think this is what the Biden folks want and what they planned for, which naturally begs the question of why they would want this. And I think that gets into the issue of whether this is really an effort to meddle in our elections. You've seen blue jurisdictions around the country try to loosen the laws around non-citizen voting, basically allowing illegal immigrants to vote in municipal and local elections. We've seen our voter rolls corrupted by those efforts. And I'm really scared, and I know a lot of other conservatives are scared, that the Biden administration's open border policies are really a backdoor way of introducing millions of new blue voters into our election system, just as it appears that the left might be about to lose political power once again.
All right. So bottom line, this is intentional. Do you think it's starting to backfire on them?
I mean, I think it clearly is. I think you've heard even Democrat politicians call for more control at the border. There seems to finally be an impetus for President Biden to use the executive powers that he already has to do something about the crisis at the border. But I think the key driver of that is just the size and scope of the problem. I mean, again, I live in Missouri, a state of about 6.3 million people. There have been more illegal arrivals since the start of the Biden administration than there are people who live in the state of Missouri. So I think the problem has gotten so acute that there's a realization among the more moderate members of the left, at least, that something has to be done. And I'm hopeful that something will be done.
When Governor Abbott started sending these illegal immigrants into these sanctuary cities, I mean, that was a shock. But it also sent a clear message and proved the hypocrisy of the left. Do you think it's working?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all of these leftists were quick to proclaim their cities to be sanctuary cities. But then the second governors like Greg Abbott and Ron DeSantis started taking them at their word and busing these illegals to their cities. They cried foul. They said it was this incredible crisis. I mean, say what you want. Chicago is not dealing with nearly the problem in terms of numbers of people that border states like Texas or Arizona are dealing with. So I think it really, as you said, does expose the hypocrisy of the left. And the fact that the left has been as sort of extravagant in its cries of panic since those efforts started, I think really speaks to just how bankrupt an ideology they represent.
Why has the American people tolerated this?
Well, I don't think the American people are tolerating it. I put a lot of blame, though, at the mainstream liberal media, who are always quick to cover up scandals when Democrats are in office, who try to put the most positive gloss possible on any Democratic policy. But I think the American people understand that you can't just have an open border, that a nation without a border isn't a nation at all. And I think that's going to be telling at the ballot box next November. I think the American people want a controlled border, whatever their views on other immigration issues might be. And I think if the Biden administration isn't able to get the border under control between now and November, they will pay for it.
Why, from your position, Will, why haven't we put more pressure on Mexico?
Well, I think that was one of the most effective things that the Trump administration did. In terms of pressurizing Mexico and the other countries in Central and South America to take a role either in allowing asylees to the remain in Mexico policy is requiring asylees to stay in Mexico while their asylum applications were processed. I think the Biden administration was so quick to dismantle the system that the Trump administration had set up that they lost sight of the power that bilateral agreements between the U.S. and other countries in this space can have. I don't think they intended the situation to get quite as out of control as it has, and now they seem to be scrambling to catch up. But absolutely, pressurizing Mexico, which in parts of Mexico have become totally lawless, cartel-controlled spaces, pressuring the Mexican government to step up, I think, needs to be an absolute priority for our federal officials.
As you know, the Senate was responding to the House and sending back a border bill that only allowed 5,000 in a day. I mean, they really painted themselves into a corner with that. How damaging was it for the Republicans?
You know, I was expecting the bill that came out of the Senate to be bad. I wasn't expecting it to be nearly as bad as it ended up being. It essentially allowed parole for all asylees. So anyone who was coming in who filed a phony asylum claim would get to remain in the United States potentially for years. As you said, the numbers that were allowed to enter across the border before an emergency could even be declared was extreme, as 5,000 a day. There were numerous other provisions of that bill that just weren't geared towards getting the job done. So I'm glad that so many Republican senators, so many conservatives around the country cried foul. And I'm glad that it appears that bill is dead. In the meantime, Joe Biden has all the authority that he needs already to get the situation at the border under control. And hopefully now he'll feel even more pressure to do so.
So if the goal here was to increase voter registration on the left, are we expecting to see a bunch of voter registration cards handed out to these people in the next couple of months?
Well, what we've seen already in jurisdictions on the coasts, California, New York, is this push to allow non-citizen voting in local and municipal elections. The problem is that once someone is registered to vote for those local and municipal elections, they're much more likely to show up at the polls on election day for federal and state elections when they're not allowed to vote and attempt to cast ballots. The same way that we saw in 2020 with the rise of just completely unverifiable mail-in absentee ballots, what we risk here is the introduction into our system of large numbers of untraceable illegal ballots. And then unwinding that on election day and in the immediate aftermath is going to be very, very difficult. So all in all, I think you have to look at this as part and parcel of a larger leftist plan to interfere with the fair and orderly election process that the United States has traditionally had. And the more phony or fake or invalid ballots that are entering the system, the less secure our election system becomes as a whole. So to me, that's the real risk.
What's your take or forecast on the integrity of the election for 2024?
You know, I'm worried. I think in 2020, you saw this unprecedented rush towards mail-in voting. There was sort of the COVID crisis was used in, I think, a particularly cynical way to expand highly insecure absentee voting. Over 100 million votes cast in 2020 were either early votes or absentee votes, which is totally unprecedented in American history. I'm hopeful that this time around, the Republican Party The folks who are in charge of running elections in the crucial states will be more aware of these issues. I think that that rush of absentee ballots and the ballot drop boxes and all the ballot harvesting we saw, I'm hopeful that doesn't happen again, because I'm scared that if the American people lose any more faith in their election system, that we're going to start seeing serious stresses just to the fabric of our republic. I think we're seeing that already.
How does it look for you in Missouri? How's your election integrity in Missouri?
Fortunately, Missouri hasn't had a lot of the problems that other states have. We don't have this system of universal mail-in voting. We don't really have ballot drop boxes. But even here, we've had historical issues with election fraud. In 2016, there was actually a state rep primary that was thrown out and a re-election was ordered because of fraudulent absentee balloting processes. So we're keenly aware of the issues. I'm hopeful that our state leaders, our Republican state leaders, will make sure that we have fair and free elections. But this is a national struggle, and I think that we need to make it very, very difficult to cheat and also easy to vote for properly registered valid voters.
Is forgive me for not knowing, but is Missouri red or blue?
It's a deeply, deeply red state. It voted for President Trump by 19 points in 2016 and by 15 in 2020. And I think it's going to be a very, very good state for President Trump in November. But fortunately, Missouri is a deep red state these days.
Okay, so over the weekend, we saw the outcome from the primary in South Carolina. And of course, we know the numbers were staggering from Trump to Haley. But the other number that was staggering was the amount of people that actually voted. Does that tell you something?
Look, I think people are just deeply concerned with the direction of the country. And in a time like this, I think people are going to get out and vote their preferences. And the more ticked off they are about the way things are going, the more likely they are to vote. I think what we've seen with President Trump across the country, and I have the honor of being one of President Trump's attorneys, is that as this campaign of lawfare has ratcheted up with case after case after case against President Trump, people are starting to deeply identify with him. He's more of an avatar at this point than he is a normal political candidate. People are offended by the weaponization of law enforcement under the Biden administration. And I think people are going to stand by President Trump and support him because they understand just how dangerous to the republic what's going on it really is.
I don't think we've ever seen, at least in my time, we've ever seen two incumbents running at the same time. Usually in a presidential race, you have an incumbent and a newbie, so to speak. But in this case, we actually have two incumbents. So we have two administrations to compare. We have the Trump administration and the Biden administration. This is very unusual. We know what it is to be under a Biden administration, and we know what it is to be under a Trump administration. How significant is that?
I think it's highly significant. The last example of that's probably Teddy Roosevelt when he tried to run for the Bull Moose Party. So it is it's not historically unique, but it's certainly historically irregular. I think the American people know that under the Trump administration, our economy was booming. We had free and abundant energy. The border was mostly controlled. We were respected abroad. We had real deterrence abroad. Under Biden, we've seen basically two major regional wars kick off. Trouble with China is looming. Our economy is in a shambles. Real problems with inflation, cost of energy, and then this uncontrolled situation at the border. So I think comparing administration to administration, there's really no comparison. America was much better off under President Trump, and I think voters are going to remember that next November.
All right, let me take a quick break. So delighted to have with us today Will Sharpe. By the way, he is a candidate, Republican candidate for the Attorney General in the state of Missouri. Go to his website. Check it out, votesharf.com, SCHARF.com. There's the picture of the landing page. You can learn more about his candidacy there at votesharf.com. We'll come right back.
We'll be back to this week's interview in just a few seconds. In the meantime, we want to let you know that you can watch this interview, plus many more exclusive interviews that happen this week on the Dove's Daily TV and radio show by visiting our website, thedove.us. And while you're there, sign up for our free daily devotional, The Word for You Today. 3 months of daily readings that will connect you with God's Word. Now, back to the show.
Okay, welcome back, and delighted to have with us today Will Scharf. He's a former federal prosecutor and a conservative activist. He's currently running for the attorney general there in Missouri as a Republican. Formerly Trump administration, he worked to support the conservative judicial nominations, playing an incredible role in the confirmation of Supreme Court Justices Brett Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett. So he's well-educated. He's got a lot of experience. Will, before I leave the border thing, the president, Biden, is considering some kind of an executive order concerning the border. You have any idea what it is?
No, I think we'll see when he finally rolls it out. But it really does underline the fact that Biden has had the authority to deal with the border all along. He didn't need Congress to pass a new bill, the same way that President Trump was able to get the border under control when he was in office. Biden could have done that at any point since he took office. He could have enacted similar policies. He could have gotten this asylum crisis under control. The fact that he's chosen not to, I think, speaks to the intentionality of it, which should be deeply troubling to all conservatives and Americans.
Yeah. All right. I want to squeeze your legal brain for a little bit. President Trump is facing all kinds of legal things, legal gate, whatever you want to call it. It's a mess. But it looks like this morning that his team is going to go ahead and file an appeal in the New York civil fraud case. Something has to be done because he's accumulating interest at a tune of $100,000+ a day. I thought this case was unappealable. Is that right or wrong?
No, it's definitely appealable. And we plan to pursue all appellate options that are available to us in that case and others. There's also the E. Jean Carroll defamation case, which will be up on appeal relatively soon. But it just goes to show that what we're seeing with President Trump is this just totally unprecedented campaign of lawfare against him, whether it's the efforts to pull him off the ballot. That's the Colorado case that we're awaiting a judgment on from the Supreme Court now, to all these criminal cases, to these civil cases in New York. It's really an unprecedented weaponization of our system of justice. And the fact that it's being done for such nakedly political ends, I think, is just frankly un-American.
Does he stand a chance for an appeal in New York?
I think so. When you look at that New York civil case, there are numerous legal issues that were present at trial. I think there were numerous judgments along the way that are ripe for appeal. That whole case has just been highly irregular from the start. It's an application of a New York statute that may in and of itself have constitutional issues. So we believe that that case is ripe for appeal. It obviously is going to be appealed. And I'm certainly hopeful that, Tish James's triumphant spiking of the football over the last couple days is going to come back to haunt her.
I just found it so interesting that her arrogance and her anger and her meanness towards Trump was a reflection of what they accused of him being.
Yeah, it's a really good way of putting it. You may remember that when President Trump was first running for office, people said that he was going to use tools of government vindictively to go after his enemies. Well, Tish James ran for office on the platform that she was going to sue Trump, that she was going to go after his businesses, and that she was going to go after his money. And then she got into office and aided and abetted by the Biden administration. She's gone out and done exactly that. That's not the way, as a former prosecutor, that's not the way that cases are supposed to work. You're not supposed to single somebody out for selective prosecution and then pursue them to the ends of the earth. That's a perversion of our justice system. And I'm certainly hopeful that the higher courts in New York see that and that President Trump ends up being vindicated.
As the appeal is filed, does that suspend interest and penalties?
Typically, when you file an appeal, you have to post a bond in some amount to secure the judgment, to prevent execution of that judgment coming into effect. That hasn't happened yet, but I think it's been said that that's in the work.
What do you think of the Fannie Willis case unwinding the way it is?
It's pretty incredible. It's worth noting that when it was first filed, the leftist mainstream media covered it breathlessly and said that this was going to be the case that would finally bring down Donald Trump. Instead, about a year later, we see that Fannie Willis hired her secret lover, who was wildly unqualified, to prosecute this case, paid him about $1 million taxpayer dollars. They've both now perjured themselves on the stand with respect to the nature of their relationship. I think both she and her secret boyfriend, Nathan Wade, are going to be disqualified. And I hope that entire case is dismissed. But again, it's worth noting that this case was, it appears that it was stage managed in part out of the Biden White House. Both Willis and Wade spent a significant amount of time in the White House counsel's office meeting with people there right as this case was getting started. So I don't think this this issue of legal corruption ends with Bonnie Willis and Nathan Wade. I think it goes all the way to the top, to the Biden White House as well.
So when does the Wade White House part of this argument show up?
Well, so Nathan Wade booked the state, billed the state for 8 hours of time that he spent on in the White House counsel's office on November 18th, 2022, which is the exact same day that Jack Smith was appointed special counsel by Merrick Garland. So maybe that's a coincidence, but that seems highly, highly suspicious to me. And the fact that the Biden administration was clearly involved in seeding this prosecution and assisting this prosecution, I think speaks to just how closely Biden and his core aides have been stage managing this entire campaign of legal election interference against President Trump. But certainly with respect to that Georgia case, I believe it was corrupted from the start. I think the case should be dismissed in its entirety. And I'm hopeful that there's a real chance that the courts down in Georgia are going to do just that.
All right. So, Will, right now, the current judge on the Fannie Willis case, basically what's at stake here is her being disqualified from the case. Doesn't make the case go away. How do you make the case go away after this decision is made?
So if Fannie Willis is disqualified, another district attorney would be appointed to take over the prosecution. And if they, on reviewing the facts and the law, think that the case shouldn't have been brought, it would be they would be well within their rights to dismiss the case in its entirety. I think that's a very real possibility. I don't think this case ever should have been brought. I think it's a wild and novel application of Georgia's RICO statutes. I think there are numerous factual defects with the underlying indictment. And I'm hopeful that any fair prosecutor would see that and would just start to work to unwind this this absolute travesty that's occurred down in the Georgia court.
So could the current judge dismiss the case along by disqualifying the prosecutors?
Potentially, yes. That would be a sanction for prosecutorial misconduct. That's an extreme sanction. But the prosecutorial misconduct in this case is so profound that I think that would be warranted here as well.
Does she survive as Attorney General? Or, what is she? District Attorney?
Fulton County DA?
Yeah. Does she survive?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I've said before, I think she faces very real criminal liability at this point. Potentially federal honest services fraud, wire fraud, federal bribery charges. I mean, what she did here, hiring her secret lover, paying him state money, and then benefiting on the back end in the form of lavish vacations and gifts that he was treating her to, it certainly looks a lot like something that would be prosecutable as political corruption. So she may be in more real criminal peril at this point than any of the defendants in that case. Politically, whether this counts against her amongst the Fulton County Democrat electorate, I don't know. But she certainly hasn't done herself any favors here. And I'm hopeful that at the end of the day, the rule of law will be vindicated and she'll be held responsible for her acts here.
In the meantime, there's a high probability that President Trump gets reelected. Let's say he gets reelected and these cases haven't been settled. What now?
Well, with respect to the federal cases, a new attorney general of the Department of Justice could just decide to dismiss them. With respect to the other cases, it's very difficult to prosecute a sitting president. It can be difficult to sue a sitting president, depending on the terms of the lawsuit or the nature of the lawsuit. So I think a lot of this this legal churn and burn that's been going on would basically go away the day that President Trump is reelected. I think that's what's really at stake in this election, is whether we'll allow this weaponization of our system of law enforcement to continue. But I don't believe that President Trump is going to stand trial on either the two federal cases or this Georgia case before Election Day. So ultimately, the American people are going to have to decide at the ballot box who they want to be their next president. They're going to have that right. And I believe they're going to pick President Trump.
How do you, as an attorney and now high probability of becoming an attorney general of a state, how do you somehow regain, integrity into your industry with all these messes?
Yeah, you know, it's difficult. I think people today, you know, when I was growing up, we thought of the FBI as this, an incredible law enforcement agency, sort of a great example of how the federal government can get things right. I think confidence in the FBI and the Department of Justice is at an absolute all-time low. I think that the American people see that our laws are being unfairly and unevenly enforced. When you see pro-life protesters being thrown in prison, but Antifa given a walk for the rioting and violence they've committed in cities all across America, I think that really speaks to what's at stake. The only thing I can say is the only way the situation gets better is if more good people get involved in the political process, get involved in law enforcement, get involved in prosecuting crimes. I think that if we elect people who are honest, people of integrity, people who understand America's core values and principles, that's ultimately going to be what saves America from this very dark and dangerous time that we're living through right now.
Who would you like to see as Attorney General?
Of the United States?
Yes.
Oh, I think my friend Matt Whitaker did a pretty good job as acting Attorney General. I think he'd be a logical choice. Maybe Pam Bondi, the former Attorney General of Florida. But look, just based on having spent some time with President Trump, knowing the people he has around him now, I think he has an outstanding team around him, maybe the best team he's ever had. And I'm confident that the next Trump administration will have really top-tier people, basically in all the key cabinet posts and throughout the White House office.
One other question before I let you go, and that's back to the borders. They have in the House impeached Mayorkas. I don't know. Do you think the trial's got We'll see the light of day in the Senate?
I don't know. It should. I mean, you read the Constitution. I think the Senate is supposed to call a trial. I don't think there's much of a chance of him being convicted just based on the makeup of the Senate right now. But I think it was very important for the House to send the message that Mayorkas's failure to enforce the law at the border is something that should be punished. It's something that he should be held accountable for. So I'm thankful that the House, went through the impeachment process. And I'd be hopeful that the Senate would do the right thing and at least give those charges a proper airing in the public eye.
What about perjury?
Well, that too. But we've become so kind of inured to perjury. I mean, I think these top officials in D.C., they lie all the time. They lie through their teeth. I think many of them lie so much they don't even know what the truth is anymore. But again, I mean, whether it's Fani Willis in Georgia or Mayorkas or Hunter Biden, the amount of perjury going on in our political and legal systems today, it's profound. I mean, I think that honesty is just a core value that obviously we should all uphold. But certainly those who are entrusted with public power, with public responsibility, we need honest people in government. And I don't think we have that right now.
Well, Will, you're a fascinating guy. Best of luck to you and your campaign. Looks like you're going to pull it off. God bless you, my friend. You got a lot of things ahead of you. I didn't realize Missouri was so far down the road. You're going to be just in time for the convention.
Yeah, it's a pretty crazy process, but we're having a lot of fun.
All right. God bless you, friend. Stay in the fight. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for listening to this week's Focus Today podcast. Remember, you can visit our website to check out all the interviews we did this week on our daily Focus Today TV show at thedove.us. And if you like this podcast, please take a moment to rate us and share it with your friends.